Happy Wednesday, Reshmi Nair and Bob Reed with you here as we begin our Wednesday edition of the Smart Speaker Series here on The Rush. And joining us for the best Wednesday edition of the show, Matt Gurney, journalist and co-founder of The Line, an online magazine, and Lindsay Broadhead, communications and issues management with the Board of Trade. We appreciate both of you for making time for us today. Let us start with photo radar. A lot of photo radar out there in the city of Toronto, not enough to be issuing all the tickets needed. You remember there was a backlog, and so they couldn't issue all of the photo radar tickets? Well, in this one case, the Toronto Star's Ben Spurr has documented how the owner of a car that was caught going more than 70 kilometers an hour over the limit fought the law and won. Well, fought the charge of this automated speed camera. This is specifically on Avenue Road, clocking them going 121 kilometers an hour, well over the 50 kilometer an hour speed limit. And this was just after 3 o'clock in the morning. So that comes with about a $1,400 fine. But they challenged the ticket and they won because the driver said he wasn't speeding. And the officer who signed off on the ticket could not provide technical details explaining how he knew the camera was accurate. Is this a loophole that we should all know about, Matt Gurney?
I mean, I wish I'd known about that a couple of months ago when they put a robo camera right outside where my wife worked and no one realized it for weeks. And my God, what an expensive few weeks that ended up being. I can I just say on the record, I love these cameras. I love robotic cameras. I know I'm going a little against the grain on these things. I think they're fantastic. The more tickets we have these things issuing, the happier I am. But I think we need to actually make sure, because my main takeaway here is the guy who goes to court to represent the city should probably understand basic things, because one of the requirements that the guy couldn't answer at trial is he couldn't vouch for when the last time the device was maintained was. It has to be maintained within at least 12 months of the ticket being issued. The Star, Ben, went and found out that, yeah, it had been, but the guy on the stand representing us didn't know that. I feel like we're kind of owed $1,400 here. We should have been able to make this charge stick.
Yeah, Lindsay, I'm kind of on that on that side of this one, that they should have had better answers. They should have known where the defense was going to object on this and be ready for it. But at the same time, you know, it's if you're going to mount a challenge, that's a fairly effective way to do it. No.
Yeah, I mean, so taking a step back, this is a 35-year-old man who's borrowed his mom's car. He's driving at 3 a.m. He claims that he knows he wasn't speeding at that time because he knew there was a speed camera there and slowed down. So first of all, this guy's story is so ridiculous, I think, right out of the gates. And I know I'm making a rash judgment, but there we are. That's what smart speakers allows us to do. But yeah, I also am giving police officers right now a lot of rope. I don't really need them to know how speed cameras work. That's not what I intend or need that guy to work to be in charge of. He should have done more homework before the trial for sure. But this sets a ridiculous precedent for you know, all of the cameras moving forward. People are just going to go to court. You know, there'll be any number of loopholes where we can't prove that the technology was working. It either works and has been pre-tested and vetted, or it hasn't.
Lindsay, going to stay with you on this one, because it's very much a communication story, I think. And this is the headlines that food prices are going to go up now that the holiday period price freeze is over. And Galen Weston and Loblaws are in the crosshairs on this one. Your thoughts on Loblaws' positioning overall and how now that we're coming to the end of the freeze is playing out?
Yeah, well, I mean, and there's any number of different ways that you could approach this topic, but parking for a moment, my beliefs around food pricing and the way that our food industry is set up here in Greater Toronto and Ontario, the marketing plan around this, I find fascinating. This company has already had ample opportunity to see what happens when they make a huge announcement and then have to walk it back. They did that a couple of times during COVID. So here they are talking about something about their lower tier brand food offering. So it's already affecting the most vulnerable in our city and those who are already counting their pennies the most, and say that we're going to have this freeze. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to realize that they're going to have to lift that freeze at some point. And that's exactly what's happened. So the arc on this story, whether, you know, it bought them any good credit, which I think is questionable at the beginning, you know, again, it doesn't take a genius to realize that they're going to pay for it on this end. And that's exactly what's playing out. Middle of February, costs are skyrocketing. People are, you know, the pressure cooker couldn't be tighter and hotter. And this is what they choose to do. I have zero sympathy in this case, just because it was a horrible marketing exercise.
And CTV News is reminding us it's been more than 5 years since Canada's Competition Bureau began its investigation into that bread price fixing scheme. No charges have been laid, no conclusions of its probe. It's been 5 years. Some people might be remembering that bread price fixing scenario, Matt, when they look at the prices of butter going up.
Yeah, that's really interesting, right? Because everybody was mad about the bread price fixing, rightly so, and, you know, there were consequences for that. But we also live in a country where it is actually a matter of explicit federal policy to keep the price of food staples high. Dairy, poultry, anything that's supply managed, right? We have a very deliberate policy of keeping the food prices high here. I understand the economic and industrial arguments for protecting your domestic supply. And I even think during COVID, especially those dark early months, I kind of was glad that we at least had some remaining domestic food production within our own borders, just in case things had gotten really medieval out there. I like eggs. I like the fact that we would have eggs. But I also just think, like, if we're going to be angry about the bread price fixing, and we should be, shouldn't we also be angry the fact that right now that single parent out there facing food inflation, maybe facing poverty, goes to the store to put some fresh milk in front of their kids at home, and they're getting gouged to prop up the dairy farmers here. So I just find it interesting because there's a political dimension to this, right, Reshmi? Because, you know, we've heard Jagmeet Singh, we've heard some liberals talking about this. They all love dairy price fixing. They just don't like it when the grocery stores do this. It's not hard to see that the difference is all political.
It is fascinating. And lobbying in this country, I think, is becoming more understandable to the average Canadian as they try to understand the price of milk, as you've explained, Matt.
Gurney, help me out with this one. Okay, nobody was hurt in the Vaughan Mills robbery where the guys bashed through the mall entrance and drove through in their car. As soon as I saw the footage, I was thinking, it's the Blues Brothers. Am I right?
So you went... Well, you went Blues Brothers. I went Dawn of the Dead. Like, that was, like, very different reactions. But I went right back to, I think it was 1978, Dawn of the Dead, when the biker raider guys breached the mall. Our protagonist survivors are hanging out. And Bob, it's funny. My sister also, like, sent that link earlier and said, hey, it's the Blues Brothers. And I was watching the clip. I don't know. Maybe it just tells you all you need to know about how we were raised, that she went Blues Brothers and I went Dawn of the Dead.
Lindsay? It just felt like a big truth or dare to me. And the guys were like, I'm going to take dare. And I think they were quite thoughtful, actually, on their exit. Like, I'm kind of obsessed by the video, you know, after they pass the jewelry stand or something in the middle, and there's a video game console or something like that in the middle of the mall. He very gingerly edges his car towards the door so that the door's nicely, you know, open. I thought it was quite considerate, really.
That's what I noticed, too. On exit, it was like, oh, am I going to make it? Oh, yeah, I am. Wow.
Yeah, I am.
And now we are all watching that footage on repeat. I'm glad we're seeing the same things, Lindsay. Lindsay Broadhead, Matt Gurney, our smart speakers on this Wednesday afternoon. And our series continues just on the other side. We'll get into more of today's headlines with our smart speakers. It's The Rush, News Talk 1010 Toronto.
Bob Reed with Rush Me Nair on The Rush on your Wednesday afternoon. Continuing with our smart speakers panel, we've got Lindsay Broadhead, Communications and Issues Management Specialist, and Matt Gurney, journalist and co-founder of The Line online magazine. Lindsay, to you first on the issue of $6 million in savings found at City Hall. Kind of a drop in the bucket on a $16 billion budget overall, but $6 million is $6 million. Where do you think it should go?
I think it has to be towards housing in some regard. It's pretty small, but what the argument or the approach, I suppose is a better word, should be for all of our money is it's going to the things that matter most. Whether it's, you know, apparently small, like 6 million, although that number is very large to me, but a smaller number, or the $16 billion number of the bigger budget, all dollars need to be trending towards what matters most. And we demonstrate none of it's wasted.
Matt, do you think whatever they decide on, this could be the first time the mayor uses his strong mayor powers? He can just take one third support of council and spend that money how he likes?
To be honest, probably no. My gut feeling is that I think he's going to want to keep that in the back pocket as much as possible. I have no doubt these powers are going to be used. I mean, I'm trying to remember what's that old saying about how, you know, if in your movie you establish that there's a loaded gun in the house, eventually that loaded gun will be used. We all know the mayor has strong mayor powers. They're going to get used eventually.
The question is, it's Chekhov's gun from Ben.
Thank
Harrison.
You. Chekhov's. Oh. See, what is it with Ben and just having instant Fancy. Recall of obscure stuff? Way to go, Ben. Chekhov's gun. If you establish in your plot, yeah, you're welcome, that there's a loaded gun, it will be used. We've established that there are these strong mayor powers. They are going to get used eventually. I hope that we have a degree of circumspection about when they get used, though. And I think Lindsay's right, though. Like, we actually do have a crisis right now in the city. I don't know if it gets thrown specifically at housing. Maybe it goes into homelessness or something. But no, for sure, I think this will get repurposed very publicly and visibly into something that in some way seems to help the problem we're currently having.
What's really interesting about the 6 million number, if I'm reading this all correctly, is that the staff were tasked with finding efficiencies and all they found was 6 million, mm-hmm. Which also tells me that, you know, it reaffirms what we already know, which is we're running a very tight ship here. There is no more wiggle room. All the efficiencies and red tape have been found according to that number. So I think that's quite a meaningful exercise that I haven't seen in any coverage so far.
Lindsay, we'll stay with you as we move to the Green Belt and a new revelation from the NDP leader at Queen's Park, Mart Stiles. She's going to be joining us in the next hour, so we'll go deep on this. But her latest allegations are that the mayor of King Township and a developer in the area might have been part of discussions ahead of the government's move to make some land in that part of the Greenbelt available for development. I know there's a lot of allegation and denial here, but do you think this is building towards anything, or is this just another grasp at a straw?
I just don't know. There's so much speculation in all of this. And, you know, the Star has the series out right now around, you know, the Greenbelt saga. So you can sign up for updates and stuff. And it's very, you know, there's a lot of intrigue and it seems to be leading to somewhere, but I haven't yet seen the Chekhov bullet. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really understand what's going to be revealed. There's just so much speculation. I don't understand either how this proves anything, this particular allegation. I think the reasoning that the mayor gave all seemed highly reasonable to me. I say that, though, you know, I will listen into your interview and see if there's elements to the story I don't understand or I need to hear more about.
Yeah, there's a lot of gray. What is the cleanest scenario here, Matt, that no government official ever spoke to any developer about the sale of any land? Is that how the government stays clean in this? Or is there room for discussions to be had without any dirt reaching the Ford government?
That's actually a really interesting question, and I've been thinking about it all day, which probably tells you a lot also about how bored I was for a lot of today. But I really have been thinking about this, because the more we learn about this, the worse it looks. And we have to be very careful here. We all have to be responsible communicators. These are allegations. They'll be investigated, blah, blah, blah. Lawyers, yes, I know. So let's agree at the outset that these are all just allegations. What I'm going to say is that unless some of these developers had some weird degree of like precognition, somebody spoke here. In terms of what would be the best news for the government, it could, Reshmi, be exactly what you just said, which is that there were some discussions going on. Maybe there was a map, some low-level staffer smuggled it out of the office. Someone left a sheaf of documents in view of a Zoom call. Like, there's always weird, semi-plausible ways to explain this. I guess at a certain point, though, the government is probably going to have to come up with its best explanation for what very clearly seems to have happened here. And it's going to be up to the public, the integrity commissioner, and perhaps the Ontario Provincial Police to decide whether or not they find that plausible.
Okay, last beat here. 30 seconds for both of you. There's an expert who says one of the ways we can all be happier is to not say yes to as many things as we do, because that way we'll avoid disappointment. Lindsay, make sense?
Amen. Absolutely. And in my, as a kid, I had, and I still suffer from fear of missing out. I had FOMO all over the place. I was running from party to party. I wanted it all. And that you change, right? Like, life changes. And then the moments when you're going out, they have to become more meaningful, but there's that same pressure. So yeah, if we all gave each other a little bit more space to say no and not feel that deep regret that our probably moms planted in us, that would be amazing.
Matt?
No.
No.
You've mastered it.
No.
You've mastered it.
There we go.
It. Right
just
there.
Say no more.
Do you want to be my friend? No.
No. I actually would, but I'm afraid you forced my hand.
There you go.
That's right.
We're all friends here. Thank you all so much. You know, the only FOMO you should have is if you're missing the Smart Speaker series, or really 2 to 6 right here on the Rush on News Talk, Denton, Toronto. Thank you both. Lindsay Broadhead, communications and issue management expert, Matt Gurney, journalist and co-founder of The Line. It's an online magazine. And it's Bob Reed and Reshmi Nair here with you on this Wednesday afternoon. The next hour of The Rush begins on the other side of this break, and we will hear from Marit Stiles, the leader of the Ontario NDP. She has a Freedom of Information request that has now been submitted to the Integrity Commissioner as they look into the Greenbelt development. We'll learn more coming up.